Each one of us is a copyright owner, whether we want to be that owner or not. The fact is, we are.
Sharing is nice. That's a lesson ingrained in us before we're even old enough to go to school. Whether it's sharing your toys, sharing your time, or sharing your work, sharing's just what nice people do for each other. The only exception being sharing germs. That is not nice. The idea of sharing is a little more complicated when you're a grown-up. Some people will shell out big bucks for your eyewitness photos or video of Bigfoot, or the rights to your rap dedication to lolcats. And when a price tag can be put on any video, photograph, or written work you're responsible for, the instinct would be to hold on a little tighter. With the cost of creative technology and digital distribution rapidly approaching zero, the need to play grown-up with creative works is coming earlier and earlier. But is there still room for caring and sharing in all of this? This week, David Weinberger speaks to Kenneth Cruz, the director of the Copyright Advisory Office at Columbia University and a scholar of copyright law, about how we can share.
For about 200 years in this country, we had pretty straightforward copyright law. It didn't fill very many pages in the book, and it granted a set of rights, and it had some regimes that went with it. Notions of fair use evolved slowly, incrementally. But there we were, fairly straightforward system. Lots of complications, but not nearly where we are today. The last time I counted, and I know there have been more since then, there were at least 50 different bills that had, in fact, amended the Copyright Act since the 1976 revision. Copyright applies automatically to a huge range of materials and grants a broad set of rights, and those rights now last for an extraordinarily long period of years, for the rest of the life of the author, plus 70 more years. And the simple fact is that if I'm writing a musical composition that's a pop song and I want to sell it and this is my livelihood, maybe I want all those rights. If I'm investing $100 million to produce a motion picture that's going to go into the theaters and go into DVD and be sold in other ways, maybe I want all those rights. Maybe I, in fact, need them to just recoup my expenses. But on the other hand, you know, if I take a snapshot on vacation, if I write an essay that's exploration of a scholarly issue, I really want that. I may want that material out there, shared among relatives, shared among colleagues, shared among friends. I may want it out there. I'm not thinking about copyright. I don't want all those rights. And yet the law gives them to me anyway. So one of the things that a member of the public, that individual, can do is take a look at the fact that each one of us is a copyright owner, whether we want to be that owner or not. The fact is, we are. And we have all of those rights with respect to nearly everything that we create. Tell the public, tell the users what your attitude is. And one way to do that that's grown up in it to be very simple and widely accepted is the notion of Creative Commons. So you post those family pictures, vacation pictures to Flickr, you can choose to have it with a Creative Commons license. Or you post it to your website. You say, copyright 2009 by me, but permission hereby granted to the public to do this and that, or Creative Commons. Maybe I want attribution, maybe I want to limit it to non-commercial uses. Those are my choices. But Creative Commons lets us signal to the world that these are the rules of engagement with this work that I want.
If I post something with a Creative Commons license and somebody violates it, they republish it commercially, they may make money off it against my declaration, my Creative Commons declaration, what is the enforcement mechanism?
You're still the copyright owner. Let's assume that, and that's a pretty safe assumption. Let's assume you haven't given it away to somebody else in the meantime. You still have your legal rights. So the Creative Commons license essentially says, I own the copyright. I hereby give the public this permission. So if the use, as you described, is outside the scope of that permission, then it, you know, barring fair use or some other exception, it's a violation. Now, suppose I really wanted to shut down that activity. I really wanted to go after it. Well, I do have that choice. you know, realistically, whether it's my own personal essay, a family vacation, vacation photo, or that pop song that's supposed to make a lot of money for me, realistically, I'm going to send a letter to the user saying, by the way, that's mine. I don't approve what you're doing. I'm going to send a notice to somebody that basically says, by the way, it's mine. I don't approve of what you're doing. Please take it down now. And, you know, realistically, that's the way most of these sorts of misunderstandings, whatever you want to call them, that's the way most of them are resolved. Now, if there's a dispute, then we have to go to take it to the next level. And I would say this, if you've got a work that you're concerned about protecting, then maybe you should register it with the U.S. Copyright Office, because then that gives you some additional legal rights that might make enforcement realistic. But that's another story.
Even if I register my work with the Copyright Office, I could still Creative Commons it. I could still take out a Creative Commons license.
Absolutely.
And if I need, under some circumstance, I need to enforce the Creative Commons, my Creative Commons preferences, the mechanism for doing so, the authority, will still be the copyright law.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. Somebody says, I'm the copyright owner. The law gives me this huge sweep of rights, but I only want some of them. I want to let go of this and allow these kinds of uses, but I want to reserve my right to enforce this.
You've explained that copyright is a bundle of rights that the owner is free to unbundle as he or she wants. As new technology comes along, new uses, new possibilities of distribution, are new rights being added to that bundle? Or is the bundle simply all the different contractual sorts of relationships we want to make with various publishers and means of distribution and the like?
The basic rights of a copyright owner have evolved over the last 100+ years. And the basic rights, what are sometimes called the economic rights, are the rights of reproduction of the work in copies, distribution of copies, the making of derivatives, and public performance and public display of that work. Have we seen modification of that list? Yes, we have. Congress in the mid-1990s adjusted in an important way for the music industry that public performance right and expanded and restructured the rights there for musical works in particular. Congress added in the early 90s a concept of moral rights, which was a requirement as part of the international treaties, but we added it in such a narrow, narrow way that it's almost inapplicable under American law.
Could you explain what moral rights are?
Sure. Moral rights encompass a few things, but the most important of them, the best known of them, are the right to have your name on your work. You know, isn't that a surprise that the law really doesn't protect that in general? The right to prevent the destruction of the work or mutilation of the work. When the United States joined the Berne Convention in 1989, we had to add moral rights to our statutes, but we did it in the very narrowest way. It's a concept that really has not been a comfortable fit with American notions of copyright. So Congress was really not interested in adding it as broadly as European governments had. So we added it very, very narrowly. Another notion that's been added to the law was the DMCA, 1998 Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And it added this prohibition against the circumvention of technological protection measures. It gives the copyright owner a legal right to against somebody who cracks the protective lock on that material. So even if I'm cracking the lock in order to make a use of that content that we all agree is absolutely lawful, fair use or something else, still I crack the lock. And that becomes a form of a violation.
Or if you are an academic studying this particular field and you are looking into how the code works, that also apparently can count as an attempt to circumvent the DMCA.
There is an exception for the study of encryption and lets you explore the coding on these locks, but you know, it's that exception is subject to numerous requirements in the law that I think most people who are studying encryption aren't finding it to be a very useful exception.
So I've steered you down. I've distracted you from our topic. I'm sorry. Which is what an individual can do in order to succeed in the world of copyright.
Well, it depends what you mean by succeed. It depends what you want. I mean, you know, the measure of success is what's your goal. And but, you know, if your goal is to make something available, you know, Creative Commons, say it's mine, but I'm willing to share, and here are the terms in which I'm willing to share. Or if you don't like Creative Commons, make up your own. I used to do that before Creative Commons. Copyright by me, but permissions hereby granted to the public to use it in this way and that way. That's a good thing. Go ahead and slap that on your work. It's a good thing. Or if it's especially digital kind of material and you want people to have access to it, don't put it behind one of those locks. Don't put it into a system that has locks, that has those technological protection measures. Similarly, be careful where you publish. If it's a work for publication, watch out. You put it you publish it with certain journals, many of them. They are going to require, as part of the publication, a transfer of the copyright, and then now it's theirs, and those publishers are going to package this material in a way that makes it difficult to access. You're going to charge users a fee. We're going to have users sign agreements and assent to certain terms of use, and there's going to the publisher is going to control the use of this material. You, the author, might be saying, I want readers. But the publisher is saying it's not yours anymore. It's what we want, and we want to have a product that earns some revenue.
One of the hurdles to getting more material out into the open has been not just copyright, but traditionally in academics, schools have been reluctant to accord open access journals the same respect that they do for the closed publications. Is that changing?
That's definitely changing, and it can't change fast enough. The horizon out there of the transition, the tipping the balance from print to electronic, that horizon's moving at us very fast. And I think more and more people in academic circles are realizing that as they discover that that's how they're doing their research. They're sitting at their desks and pulling stuff up on the computer. More and more material is available in that manner. And I think that means that people who were skeptical in the past are increasingly accepting of the of this online and digital publishing. And with it may come terms of open access.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Kenneth Cruz is the director of the Copyright Advisory Office at Columbia University and a scholar of copyright law. You can find his blogs and podcasts at copyright.columbia.edu. This episode of Radio Berkman was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, with help this week from the Harvard Office for Scholarly Communication and the Harvard Law School Library, from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge.